Hello, you metal freaks. This is King Diamond, and you're listening to 3RingRadio.com with Shane. You better stay tuned.
Shane Bugby for Michael Hunt Publishing, www.evilnow.com. He came on our show to promote some of his products. He did like the Dana Plato CD, Dana Plato's Final Breath, the Hitler CDs, and
Jim Jones CD, the Aleister Crowley CD. He's got the Pentagram pint glasses. He's got a whole bunch of stuff.
Satanic kitchenware. But he flew in to do our radio show in L.A., and we hung out with the guy. We put him up in the Boone compound for a couple of days, and we just started drinking and saying, hey, man, let's take this crap on the road.
This is Shane Bugby, the whole master behind this angry white male tour. Yeah. This is my first time meeting this guy, but I feel like I'm with family.
Why can't you now say, I'll take your pictures off of my website?
A show every parent should see before your child logs on.
Meet a man who has sunk to a new low.
I have every right to do what I'm doing.
This is who you need to guard your kids against. Become educated on how to protect your children from being victimized on the internet.
Tomorrow on Queen Latifah.
Well, I'll tell you what. Coming up next, we're going to meet Shane, the creator of the website. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Pat of Penn and Teller. You're listening to 3 Ring Radio, but I've been known to lie.
Of the 24-hour radio show, and so we were a little discombobulated, to say the least. So it wasn't a really great interview, and I could talk to you for days. You have so much a wealth of knowledge. The one reason I emailed you is I'm very upset by the politics of today, what's going on, and especially anti-censorship, I guess that's my fetish as far as politics goes. Mm-hmm. And I believe the First Amendment is the most important. I think it binds all the rest of our... It binds the Constitution together, and without it, all the rest fall.
Well, it really is a way of keeping the diversity happening here. And that's what the foundation of the Constitution is about, allowing diversity without people suppressing it for their own particular majoritarian interests.
And it seems like, the Bush administration's really going after that stuff with the FCC and stuff. And it's angered me up to the point where I feel I feel, geez, how do you, when I was a young man, maybe I'd throw a brick through a window, okay? I've since changed my evil ways. I want to not get put in jail. I want to accept responsibility for what I do, so I don't do those things. But, you know, what is there left to do? I feel like tanks are going down the block, and I'm not with that. You know, I'm just not with that.
Well, no, and you know what's really amazing is that since it seems that the catalyst for this recent push was the Super Bowl, where they had that show where everybody got to see, for a moment, Janet Jackson's sad little titty. And that's supposed to be so shocking and awful that the entire nation has to lose its free speech because a common garden variety breast, which everyone should have seen at some point or another, it's not something shocking, and nothing particularly obscene or lascivious was happening with it, has now become this cause for shutting down everything, that saying that, oh, everything is just going, you know, way out of bounds, and it's just, you know, the uptightness in the United States because of Puritan heritage over anything that's even remotely sexual is kind of makes us the laughingstock of most of the world, where that's concerned. And when you have a current administration that is pushing a very strong Christian agenda, you get this kind of 1-2 punch that wants to just shut everybody up and only promote this very limited God and apple pie kind of approach. And that's really not what the Founding Fathers intended. And really, the way to prevent that from moving further is to wake people up and show them that, you know, they could lose things that they enjoy. You know, when you look at the kind of programming that's popular, you know, unfortunately, somebody who's considered a shock jock and who's always getting in trouble, like Howard Stern, you know, his ratings have been dropping, and you know, he doesn't serve as a good poster boy anymore. Once he did, because his popularity was amazing. And as he used to say, and as the statistics used to say, that people who hated him would watch him or listen to him for, say, 20 minutes, and the people who liked him would listen to him less. So it's,
right.
The more he outraged people, the more they would pay attention. And with shows on home box office like The Sopranos, which are full of you know, crass language and violence and sexuality, and even on network television, you'll have something like the cop shows that they have these days, which you know, are pretty broad in what language they use, but in a way that's realistic. It's not used gratuitously.
Well, let's look at America's Most Wanted, where they describe rape acts in full detail.
Sure, sure. Well, and that show is so amazingly self-righteous.
Oh yeah, it's awesome.
You know, it's really quite a spectacle in and of itself. But the thing is, these things are popular. People really do enjoy that. And they watch these things on a regular basis, and they are not, you know, Leave It to Beaver. And if this kind of agenda is pushed further, they're going to lose those shows, and I think that's going to make them wake up. I hope we don't have to wait until that happens.
You know, I have no faith in this fucking country anymore, these people that are in this country. I think that there's like a 1% of people that are worth living in this country. I'm really angry because I don't think these fucks will do a goddamn thing until their Big Macs are taken away or their cigarettes or their alcohol. They just, you know, when I started doing what I do and put out books that were bricks to the head of people who really I thought needed it,
but, you know, most people's heads are so dense that the bricks aren't going to help.
Right, they don't. You're right.
It's the way of the world. It's the stratification of our species. And most people are sheep, and they're going to be led around.
Yeah, but those people are killing everything. Because they don't care about... They'll take Sopranos. I think... I don't think Janet Jackson's boob had anything to do... I think they had a specific plan from before he got into office. And I'm not talking deep conspiracy stuff. I feel that these Republicans, they're businessmen, and they had a plan of action on how to win the second part of this election, to the point that you hear these conspiracy things, but I've actually read news articles where they say Bin Laden has been caught for 6 months. So I think this is all well-orchestrated stuff, and I think they're going after Howard Stern because of his anti-Bush agenda. I don't even think it's about the obscenity stuff.
Well, of course, you know, anybody who's in power will do what they can to maintain the power. We know that realistically. You know, regardless of
sure.
What the framework is, it's something that you have to expect. And it wouldn't matter who's the one in power. You know, it doesn't matter if it's Republican or Democrat. They're all going to do, you know, follow their agenda of maintaining the power that they have. So realistically, that's going to happen. But what we are fortunate to have is a fairly solid foundation of a constitution that can preserve freedoms. And that is a legal bulwark that we can rely on. And the thing is, what may be the force that keeps that moving is the people in the entertainment industry who want to maintain the freedom to do the kind of things that they do. You know, but of course, like, so much of what's done in the entertainment industry is just garbage anyway.
Yeah.
That it's all just made, you know, for like, it's essentially to make money. It's not really to promote freedom. It's not really to create art. It's just, okay, how can we get the biggest box office and, you know, rake in the bucks, and then, like, whatever's a success is imitated a million times, and then something vaguely original will happen. You know, and it's usually not even an American production. It's like something will happen in Europe. A prime example, that wonderful series that Lars von Trier did called The Kingdom, which is a very surreal and horrific portrayal of strange events in the hospital. And, of course, that's been watered down and turned into some complete cliched pablum by bringing Stephen King in and doing it for American television. So it's just an industry that's going to grind on and on and on. And really, the idea of people really having freedom is something very rare in all of human history, that we've had these golden years that seems to have really come to an end with 9/11, when that's been an excuse to clamp down on everything. And it may be a rare flower that's going to be very difficult to cultivate again. Because if you look at the past, most people have not really had the kind of freedoms that we've experienced in, say, the last, 50 to 100 years.
What do you mean by most people? You mean in the United States?
Most people in on the planet.
On the planet, okay.
I mean, when you look at most nations, I mean, most people are living under repressive governments.
Right.
And that's always been the case. Look at all of history.
Sure.
You know, most people never had any kind of access. I mean, there was no media for most of history.
Right.
So that we actually have media that has this sort of democratization of information that most people, regular people, not just the wealthy, not just the powerful, but anybody who can get access to a computer these days can get information and get this wealth of information. Of course, most of it's shit. You have to filter through it.
Exactly.
But, you know, freedom like that is rare. And the thing is, for the kind of folks like us who cherish it, we see what an amazing thing it is, and we see how fragile it is and how it's being lost. And I think most people are not the kind of folks who really cherish it so much. And it's really for a minority that freedom existed and was considered as highly as it was. Now, the people who founded this nation were the kind of people who did cherish that.
Yeah, they're the kind of people who burned flags, shot cops, blew up buildings. Those are the people who founded this country.
Well, they did, you know, the style of war during the Revolution was considered very terroristic. The idea of hiding behind walls and shooting at the British troops.
Yeah.
I mean, that was considered completely against the protocols of the time.
Exactly.
You know, they were, you know, the British considered them terrorists, and in fact, you know, when the British would take over certain areas, you know, during the Revolution, they would shoot the American commanders for being terrorists.
Absolutely, but that's what would happen. I mean, the same country that was founded on burning flags had trying to make rules against it.
Yeah, well, you know, again, it's like a flag is a piece of cloth.
I know.
And to consider it more than that is just grotesque. And you don't confuse the symbol with the actuality. and that kind of small-mindedness, which, you know, is considered something that you know, people in the North say, oh, it's just those, you know, crazy Southern folks who think that way. And, you know, and the urban people think it's those country folk, you know, who behave that way.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of conflict, again, is something that's always in existence. Like, the sophisticates see things in a little more depth often, but then they also can lose sight of other things, too. So there's compromises and trade-offs everywhere.
Peter? How do we stop from going backwards, man? We're going backwards, and I can't handle it.
You know, it may not be possible to stop it yet. It may have to go backwards to a point where there's a recognizable outrage. The thing is, when it's a slow erosion, people don't notice.
And you know, and so do you see any? How do you have a rebellion in this kind of society? How can you rebel? I mean.
Well, the thing is, outright rebellion doesn't work because if you don't have the power, you get crushed.
Right. Well, I look at McVeigh, and at the time McVeigh did what he did, I really looked into it, and I thought it. I have said this. I thought it was a semi-heroic act or a brave act. I don't know about heroic, but it was a definite brave act too.
Well, you know, I don't think it's brave just to murder a bunch of innocent people.
Well, it is brave to give your life for a cause. To me, I thought it was something I could not have done.
I don't
condone it necessarily, but I do see some sort of honor or value. Maybe I'm using the wrong words.
Well, you know, the thing is, you have to see what
bravery
context was and what, you know.
I do.
What other contexts are. The thing is, for somebody like that, they consider it an important act.
Right.
But the thing is, for the people who are just going about their jobs, that you know, it's again, like the people that happened in 9/11.
It's a sad thing, but war is hell.
Yeah, but is that really... See, the thing is, war has to be taken to the people responsible for it, not the people who aren't. And that wasn't taking it to the people responsible.
Yeah, but it was in response to the same action, but by the government. When they did that to Waco, there was no accountability.
Yeah, but they weren't hitting, you know, the government specifically. In fact, all that they did is inflame them to come down and crush any kind of opposition.
Who's they, McVeigh?
No, the government gets inflamed.
Right, but I'm saying he did that. I'm not saying what he did was smart or anything. When it happened, I looked at it and went, huh, I wonder what's going to happen here. I say, maybe this is the start of the revolution. Okay.
But it doesn't work that way.
Right, nothing happened. Nothing at all happened.
It was a futile, desperate gesture that harmed a lot of innocent people. It got a lot of attention, and it got negative attention. See, these days, everything's about marketing.
Right.
And the thing is, you don't do something, you know, that's so foolish, you know, in a public relations sense.
I understand what you're saying, and I agree with McVeigh made a mistake there. I also understand his outrage at what happened and how angry he got at, you know, I went to visit the Oklahoma site. I went to visit the Waco site. I talked to people, personal folks that had their children die in Oklahoma, and I talked to folks at Waco. They're no different. Neither of them. It's a sad story.
Whenever innocent people die,
yeah,
it's an injustice.
Sure.
And that's, you know, not a good thing.
So how do you explain eye for an eye? That's what the McVeigh thing was, giving an eye for an eye.
Well, what he thought was an eye for an eye.
Right.
It really was a mistake. It wasn't an eye for an eye.
What?
It was the wrong eye. It's like saying somebody punches you in the face, then you go punch somebody else in the face. No, you gotta, you know, it's not returning fire to the one who initiated the violence.
And
that's unjust.
And, you know, McVeigh did eventually come out and say exactly what you're saying. He made a mistake. He wished he would have snipered the right people. You know, he felt a sniper would have been better. But
power works a little differently these days. That kind of action doesn't really do what it's intended to do.
Right.
And
exactly.
It's really more of a war of ideas, not of these kind of desperate, violent actions. And it goes back to what you were saying at the beginning, that you would, when younger, feel that you want to throw a brick through a window. But the thing is, that kind of action is not going to get you where you want to go. It'll get you negative attention.
Right, and then I decided to put up books that I considered bricks.
Right. But you see, that's working with ideas. And the real war here is between competing paradigms for how things should be run. And if you can infect your ideas into a maximum amount of people, you can move the world in the directions that you want it to move.
And that's what I've been trying to do, but I still feel like after what's going on, so upsetting to me how these rights are being yanked from us left and right, and I can see no hope but leaving this fucking country. And excuse my French, my man. I don't mean to use profanities like that, but I'm a little angry, and I get, you know, my vocabulary's slipping right now.
Well, you know, the issue is not to run away like that, though, because what often happens is the pendulum swings in various directions, and it reaches an apogee and then comes back. And the whole point is, I think that people here are conditioned to expect to have the leeway and the freedom. Whether they really know what that means or not is not the point, because I'm sure they really don't. You know, because if they had been conditioned otherwise, they'd be going along that direction. However, if at the right point the oppressors can be really demonstrated to be oppressors, then people will wholesale reject them. That if we look at the Christians who want to legislate their morality and dogma, and people look at that and go, hey, you know, I don't really feel that that's my position. I don't agree with that, and why should they be making everybody else do what they do? I don't think that the majority of folks in this country are going to go along with that. You know, they use freedom as a catchphrase. It's a button. It's a good guy badge. But the thing is, it still is
That is part of America. And unless, you know, these repressors can somehow really, really brainwash them, and I don't think they can get past that because that's, you know, a 200-year-old kind of concept here. I think that it'll reach a point where it will get reversed. It's just that we're watching a swing in a different direction right now, and it's hard when that happens.
Yeah, you know, I've been through this, you know, plenty, and when I... Now, I work in the pornography industry time and again, and it's funny, when a Republican gets in office, you get the facts. And it's funny, like the day that they're going to initiate them or inaugurate them, they send out this fax of all the things you got to stop doing because a Republican's in. And when he gets out there, you can start sticking, you know, your fist up there and you can do all these other acts, but then you got to watch, you know, pornographers actually cut out a lot of stuff when these folks get in office.
Yeah, because they know that that's just going to be an easy issue for them to campaign on.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I guess my next point is, I think, I feel still hopeless, because I understand fully what you're talking about. I'm starting to believe more and more in some of the conspiracy theories that, what do you think about the New World Order? Four people running the world, 12 people running the world, and there's Bush stole the election, it seems to me, you know.
Well, that does seem to be a very neat little trick that happened. But, you know, like, I really see that most people are just basically inept. And that the very idea that power could be held in such a control, to me, is impossible. Because people are idiots for the most part. And that to have that kind of control, you'd have to have the most amazing bunch of intelligent, disciplined people. And, frankly, that amount of people doesn't exist on the planet. You couldn't make it happen. It just doesn't work that way. Just, you know, watch it, people. They're all a bunch of morons for the most part. You really can't make it work.
And that's what makes me think it could happen. When I see that, I go, you know, I look over, and when I get on the airplane or come back, I look down on the rat race, and I look at all the McDonald's strategically placed, and all the Dunkin' Donuts strategically placed, and all the rats running into the rat traps and running out with their food and poisoning the whole community, and it's just... It's just disgusting to me, and I feel like, you ever see the movie Braveheart?
Sure.
Okay, I really like that movie.
Oh, it was a wonderful film about vengeance.
Yeah, and you know, I really feel a lot of things in there, it's the same today, just we have better clothes and we got a cool TV, but everyone's eating gruel, everyone's eating mud and gruel sandwiches or whatever.
No, but they like it. See, that's
what kills me!
Well, but it's always going to be that way. It's bread and circuses. And we've, you know, the rabble are amused. They've got their Big Macs. But you see, now, we're watching a flip in that, too. Because suddenly, like, you know, there are now public health messages saying everybody's too fat. And those are out there. Have you seen those yet? They're really amazing.
Yes. I happen to be rotund. So whenever I see the word fat, I notice it. It's amazing what's going on.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And so, okay, it's like now we've gotten people to eat horribly, and, you know, and so what they term obesity is, like, out of control in America. So, okay, now we have to make people feel guilty and then switch them to some kind of, like, diet craze. So it's just, okay, you keep the sheep occupied.
And that's why I say it's so easy for this New World Order concept, it seems to me, to be so easy to control the cows and the sheep. It's
well,
easy.
It's super easy to control, but the thing is, what happens is it's controlled by people who want to just make money off of what the sheep do. It's nothing more diabolical than that. It's not people just enjoying power. It's just, you have a consumer economy. It's all about, again, like I said before, marketing.
It's as simple as it is what it is.
Yeah, it's there it is. You just look at it and go, okay. And what has happened is because we have this kind of instant communications technology that works globally, this stuff is effective over a much broader range than it ever has been before. And that with that kind of technology linking people up on the globe, the kind of again, homogenization of entertainment, of clothing styles, local abnormalities and idiosyncrasies are being swept away. And that's actually a very sad thing because, you know, you can go anywhere now in the United States and it's all the same malls and the same fast food places. You know, there's no local anything. There's no local art or cuisine or architecture. It's all prefab. It's all like the same crap everywhere.
And what do you do about that?
You know, we have to reach a saturation point. What always happens is that the trends do change. And the thing is, when you're stuck in a trend that's going in a direction that's not according to your aesthetics and tastes, what you have to then do is cherish the things that you like that they're ignoring, and actually often the things that you like that they're ignoring can be less expensive because they're ignoring them at the moment.
Sure.
You know, for those of us who are on the outside who like certain things, we can then hoard them and have a stock in them. And then when the pendulum goes the other direction, you know, then those things will be, people will be interested in them again. They'll become a fad.
Sort of like weed. When weed was cheap, when no one was smoking it, now that everyone smokes it, it's more expensive than cocaine.
That's how it works. That's the market. So the thing is, the things that we hoard, that we're interested in, at a certain point, if we corner the market on them, when the pendulum swings the other direction, then those of us who have those things can have some money and power by selling it back to these people and get quite a profit.
Yeah, I guess I'm at the point, I guess maybe it's personal, this whole thing is, I've been doing what I do for 20 years, I'm going on 20 years, 15 I've been self-sufficient, putting out and publishing underground material, a lot of it has political undertones, but it's all entertaining, and I've understood that the blockbusters were going to kill independent filmmakers at some point. I see, and then I see all blockbusters everywhere. There's everything's garbage. But then I also see hope in the internet. Like anyone with $1,000 can make a movie now.
Yeah, you get a mini DV camera and you get your Mac and you can slap together a film.
Yeah. So now it's like movie making has. I forget who said this. A famous filmmaker, but he said it'll become art when everyone's able to do it.
Well, the thing is, they'll be mostly dreck, but some of it will be art.
And it'll be mostly what?
Dreck, garbage.
Dreck.
Yeah.
That's a new word for me.
That's Yiddish.
Yiddish, hey, that doesn't go on here. I'm just joking. Dreck, I like that.
The whole point is publishing got that way when desktop publishing happened. Instead of having to really go and spend a fortune publishing things, then everybody could put out magazines. You know, Xeroxing happened. There were fanzines everywhere.
Oh, man. I was looking back at my stuff, and it's the truth. I had power before the computer boom. When I was publishing magazines, there was no home publishing craze. So I got interviews whoever I wanted.
Yeah.
And I was listening to some of these old interviews, and I can't get a scare up an interview with the local punk rock band at some point because they just want to do it through email and stuff. You know,
yeah.
It's like, oh, man.
The technology has made it so that you can put out on a high level all these different kinds of media projects that years ago you couldn't do. When I started making film, I was doing that with Super 8, and you'd have to process everything, and you'd have to actually sit down and cut it together.
Yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
It would take forever.
Yeah.
And it was cheap compared to what, the big films were, but it still wasn't cheap. You know, you had to put money aside to do it. You know, now if you get, a digital camera and you've got your computer, it's really, it costs practically nothing to do this stuff. And the thing is, you can then turn it into a QuickTime file, put it up on a website, and millions of people can see it.
Yeah.
So, there is a hope in that we actually now have a marketplace for alternative ideas that probably cannot be shut down. I don't think the genie is going to be put back in the bottle on that one.
You don't think they'll be able to restrict the internet eventually?
No.
You don't think this is a one domino Stern? Howard Stern is the easy fall guy because not one person in the entertainment industry is going to stick up for him because they've already got to put up with his horrible questionings and, berating of, hey, you have anal or whatever.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with Howard. It's like what I always enjoyed about Howard is he'd ask people the questions that you'd want to ask them that everybody was just going to be too polite to. They're just, we can't.
Right.
So Howard would ask him, hey, this is what everybody's thinking about. We know you did so-and-so, and so what was that like? And all that kind of stuff. And that was it's always what made Howard fun. And
you used to listen to Howard. I know in our own phone conversations.
Yeah, I spent many years, and the thing is really kind of after 9/11, during that time I started listening more to people who were doing more serious analyses of things. And then I listened to Howard again, and I kind of think the writing had gone downhill, and it really ended up being just a lot of puff pieces for a lot of crappy contemporary musicians, whose work I think is awful. And then, who's the bimbo of the week to come by and take her top off?
True.
So it was that really did get tired. And
you're right.
They had done before a lot more things that I think were actually more politically relevant or being more satirical and lampooning of things. And that kind of got more sparse on there. And I wish that, that was happening again. If I knew that was going on, I'd listen again.
Have you heard him in the last couple of weeks?
No.
Oh, my friend, I've listened to him since he's been in Chicago. And I agree with everything you're saying, but in Chicago I can't find anything better, okay? There's just nothing out on talk radio here. I don't have a G. Gordon Liddy. We just don't have...
Yeah, we used to have him here. He's not in New York either.
Oh, man, I think he broadcasts out of New York too, doesn't he? Or Washington?
Oh. No, it's not New York yet.
Stern, I've listened to him for years, maybe not as many as you, but the last couple weeks, he has done the best political rants that I've ever heard. And I mean, he's been railing on people. He's been, it's been great. It's been absolutely great. But it's taken, you know, this kind of stuff for him to get shaken up.
Yeah, the pressure had to be applied.
Can you hold on? Let me flip this tape.
We'll be right back.
you know, my age is working for me now because I have something old school I can just pull out and my computer means nothing.
Well, you know, when we started publishing stuff years ago, we used to have to do paste up and line tape and all that kind of thing.
So you were publishing before the computer craze as well?
Yeah, we've been publishing things since like the late 70s. So
wow, so you, how long is that, 70? Wow. What are you, 70? 78, 88, 98, 25 years, huh?
Yeah, it's a long time.
Wow. Well, I did it back then, too. Yeah, I was pasting up stuff as well. It's not that long ago, almost 20 years.
Yeah, but, you know, like, you know, we got our first computer to help with that. It was a little Commodore 64. And what was nice about that is we could actually typeset things instead of having to sit and do it on a bloody typewriter.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was great. You know, and we've been along through the ride, and again, it's made publishing so much easier. But also what it's done is it's allowed us to get professional quality along the way. Before, you know, you could put out something, but there was always a great divide between the professionally typeset thing, you know, and the stuff that looked legit as opposed to the stuff that was underground.
Mm-hmm.
And now the underground can look as good as all the legit stuff.
Boy, I almost see it the exact opposite with a lot of things. Photo quality has went in the toilet. I mean, people use JPEGs and stuff in their magazines, and you can...
Well, you know, people, see, again, that's where you go is the people... See, that's happened all along, too, though. You know, it was an aesthetic for a while, and these days, now what's happened is because of the Internet, everybody's lazy. Instead of getting like, you know, a 300 DPI picture, you know, as a JPEG or TIFF, you know, they'll like, just take some 72 DPI thing off of the Internet and slap it in there, and it looks like hell. So, you know, that's just people being lazy, though. It's you know, anybody who knows what they're doing and thinks for 5 minutes doesn't do something that stupid. But, you know, you're always going to see in anything that's being done most of it's going to be garbage. That's just the rule. So, you know, but they'll be good things. You know, like, remember when Jim Goad was out there doing Answer Me? Like, that thing was always great. You know, it was impeccably written. It was beautifully laid out. All the images were incredible.
Yeah, but the thing about Answer Me that people seem to forget is it wasn't just a Jim Goad book. It was a compilation.
Oh, yeah. You know, there were other people involved. And really, and Debbie, of course, was...
Absolutely.
The two of them together were just this amazing team that galvanized everything that came together in those incredible publications.
Yes, I did like the Answer Me series. I hate Jim Goad right now, so bringing up his name sends... I want to... whatever.
Well, you know, but the thing is, again, people who are iconoclasts, who are intelligent, don't have to like each other. But if they're out there doing something that actually can shake people up and keep them from being complacent, that's what's important.
Yeah, right. I'm perfectly happy hating Jim.
I'm sure he'd reciprocate.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's what, that brings some happiness in my life is hating him, so.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, anyway, enough about that stuff, no. You know, boy, I guess I'm talking to you. I've finally given up on or lost hope in humanity in general. I've been, you know, grasping at this. Might is right is something I really believe in, but I know when I talked to you about it on 9/11 on the 24-hour radio show we had done,
Well, I don't have any hope in humanity, and I never have. So,
yeah, right.
Finally coming around to my position.
Well, that's what I'm saying. In 9/11, you had said something about Might is Right, and I can't remember the specifics, but it was something like that, like, hey, this is Might is Right, baby, and I see things some of the times a little different. I look at Might is Right to empower some folks that maybe are in the herd, but not necessarily belong in the herd. If they just...
Might is Right simply means he who controls the power rules. And the whole point is understanding what the power really is. And then, should we stop on the train going by?
You love that? Do you love this train in my nice... I have a great studio with trains rolling by. Yeah.
I once lived near train tracks, and that was pretty interesting. Something wonderfully lonely about the sound of sirens in the middle of the night.
Oh, you know, I've been making a video for you because you wanted to see my place. So every little once in a while, I videotape something for you and put it on the shelf. And we videotaped how close we are to the trains and everything. And we actually got... Did I tell you about the Mourn Horn?
No.
The lady at the bait shop had a couple guys from the train in there. And I go in and talk to her, Marie at the bait shop, and they're telling her about the Mourn Horn. She goes, I told you, Shane. And she had told me about it before. When one of these guys hits someone on the tracks, whenever they pass that spot, they let out this
like it sounds like a graveyard cry. It's really creepy. And that she said, when you hear it, you'll know it. And I remember I'm falling asleep one night, and I go, oh, my God, Amy, wake up. There's the horn. And we heard it. It was really creepy. Now, the day Johnny Cash died, they let off those horns all day long. Horns, morn horns.
That's a really wonderful piece of folklore.
Yeah, it's it's the strangest thing because on these tracks, one half a mile, if I walk one half a mile on the tracks, I counted between almost 20 white crosses on the train tracks.
Wow.
Yeah, something like that. A lot of death over here.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, but that's how, trains are there. Gee, it's evolution process. They don't move off the tracks. They're not going to breed.
Well, we were talking, we were talking about humanity, and I guess I've given up my hope on humanity. I had some sort of fleeting hope or something that something could be done, but I really see that there's no one worth even talking to in this world, practically.
Well, the people that are going to be worth it to you are going to be few and far between, and that's, I think, always the case. The thing is, what you produce is going to reach those few because they're going to be looking for it, and with contemporary distribution abilities that you can have with something like the Internet, that you're actually more guaranteed to find that niche market worldwide than you ever were before.
Absolutely.
If you're going to publish a book, like distributing it worldwide was a pretty difficult thing. So that now, if you put this stuff on a website so anybody who's interested in it will find it. And there's a great power to that. It's really a magical thing.
Well, I'll tell you, out of all the books I've published, the last one I published was Might Is Right. And I did that with, Anton LaVey Forward. Sold it through the Church of Satan Emporium, was one of the only distributors of that book, besides myself. No distributors. It was just like the Church of Satan Emporium, me, and the Reptilian Records dude. Mm-hmm. We sold out of them. We sold quicker on that book than any book I've ever done through mainstream or regular distributors.
Right, because we've got the niche. You know, when you go to the right niche, it really works. I mean, the Church of Satan site gets huge amount of hits. It's really quite amazing.
I can attend to that.
And
test.
You know, because people, the people who are interested in that, they go there. And those kind of folks, they'll go there practically every day. So they want to see if something new is happening. And then the minute there is something new and it fits into what they're interested in, they're going to snap it up. It really is just an incredible device to get things into the hands of the people who deserve it. And that's where, the hope should lie. That we can, you can make a book and sell it that way, that it's going to reach the people who it's going to matter to. The rest of the folks, they might put it in a bookstore and it'll sit there and gather dust and they'll rip the cover off and, send it back and then, you take a loss. That kind of crap should be a time of the past. We're not the kind of, Avon Publishing or, HarperCollins or any kind of major publisher that can afford to do that. If you're a small press person, we've now got a better ability to reach our target markets. And that's a really great thing. It really is. So there's the hope for you. You're going to reach those people. On a worldwide basis.
Well, there's hope for me, just not the rest.
Well, the thing is, you'll find the people that count to you, and they'll be out there making their own products too, not just being consumers, but they'll, you'll inspire them to do things, and that will move things. You just need the right fulcrum sometimes, and there may be trends that we don't like. And repressions that happen, but we'll see a turnaround too.
The bitch of it is, I doubt I'll be alive to watch anything move like that from the shit I've done.
You know what it is? The things move very fast these days because there's such an instantaneous outreach of ideas. It's not like a book got published somewhere in one country and then it had to get translated and published in another and another. It took years for that to happen. Now it can happen in the matter of weeks, which is extraordinary. So you'll be surprised. Things get repressive quickly here, but they can also turn around and, when the whistle blows, everybody goes and it'll move in a different direction.
Isn't that the truth?
It is. It really is.
Sad but true.
So, we just wait and watch and keep doing the things that really matter to us. That is really the important goal, is to keep focus on the kind of ideas that you want to present and present them as clearly and as interestingly as possible. See, the crime these days is to be dull, because everybody expects some kind of flash and dazzle. And so if you can package what you're doing, again, the marketing is the real magic that runs things these days. And, Shane, you are a good seller with that. You have a good sense of being a huckster and a showman. And, you know, you've got the talent, and we'll be able to do that, and that's important.
Well, thank you. I was going to ask you what you thought of me. Oh, that's great. Huh. Well, I do believe that's important, and it's a shame that, to me, I've never wanted to do things and attach price tags to them and stuff. I started when I was 15, so it's very idealistic. You know, and I just really, when I look at this stuff, I wanted to help out folks like my family members, and they're just dopes now that I get to know them better, and I love them. They're just dopes. I mean, I can't help but say it sometimes. I say, you guys are just, I can't understand even what you're saying. It's like you speak in Chinese.
Well, you know, you kind of get past that stage after a while, because people don't really change. They are what they are.
Yeah.
And the thing is, there might be some things in them that are charming and something you can deal with, you know, if only for a limited amount of time.
Right. But, because they're family.
Yeah. But the whole point is to find the kind of folks that are really your tribe. And the thing is, it's really a meta-tribe spread across the world. And, you know, we're isolated often, our kind of people. But now we have some means to reach out to them. And that there is a comfort in that, in finding other people like you, regardless of how far they're scattered. And doing a radio show like this is a way of reaching them. You know, this goes out, and certain folks will listen and kind of prick up their ears and go, hey, you know, I can latch onto those ideas. I can find something very similar to how I feel, and it's a perspective that's one that I've had and maybe haven't articulated. So somebody like that, once something crystallizes in them, can motivate them to do other things that will in turn move up people. That's how things do change. It's based on ideas, and it's filtering them out and getting them to people who, you know, are that kind of catalytic kind of folks.
Yeah, well, I've been trying to do that for so long. I guess just this Bush stuff is just driving me insane when they call the moral majority a majority, and I don't see that. I think you see it as a minority, but maybe I'm wrong. I guess I'm all washed up or wrong. I don't...
You know, I don't think they're really a majority. I think they're a vocal minority, and just because of the fact that there's a lot of hardcore Christian types in this current administration, you know, they're taking the spotlight. And, you know, I think that's going to change. I think, you know, let them try to run with this right now, and I think then people will see that agenda. You know, what we've always been very happy to point out is that fundamentalist Christianity is just as bad as fundamentalist Islam or fundamentalist anything.
Sure.
That those concepts are repressive. Their idea is that if you don't believe what we believe, you know, you're condemned. We have to either force you to do it or destroy you. And that kind of repressive approach is not fundamentally American.
But here's where the conspiracy, I feel like it comes in, is like it's like a basic, any moron can put it together. When you repress people, it's just going to turn out worse. You take away certain rights, free speech, stuff like that, it's just going to be worse. You're going to see the most vile stuff hit the streets, put on phone poles. I mean, people are just going to get angry, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse.
Well, you know, what they want to do, though, is they want to promote things that are in fact...
Who's they?
The folks who are controlling things, the censors. The censors want to see something that a community would consider violent and want to oppress. See, the whole thing is not to play their game on that level. If you then say, okay, well, this is getting repressive, so we have to go overboard, then they can convince people, well, see, that's what we're trying to protect you from. You know, that wasn't rampant before, but this is where it was always going to lead, so we're right. And the thing is, that's just playing their game. Like, that's falling into exactly their game plan. Like,
no,
you have to be careful with that.
No, I'm with you. I'm getting to be an old man, okay? I don't like to be this angry. I'm happy gardening and doing a radio show, and, you know, I'm very angry, you know, about this, and it's a... I just see that happening. That's just what's going to happen in the art community anywhere. They're just going to get more vulgar, more outrageous. I mean, I don't know. I guess what you're saying is that they are pushing buttons to make it their case.
Yeah, well, see, some people just say, okay, you know, I'm like a little bratty child. You're going to tell me not to do this, and I'm going to throw a tantrum.
Right.
And the whole thing is, when you have a child that's acting like a brat in public, everybody else just kind of gets embarrassed and goes, you know, I wish that would go away. And the whole point is not to do that, like, because that's just too easy. The whole point is to say, no, we're not trying to do something that is something that unanimously everybody would say was disgusting. However, What we are going to do is present a point of view that is not in agreement with your doctrines and your dogma, but it isn't something that you can lock up and shut up and declare obscene. It's just a different point of view. It's not yours. It's a different set of values, but it is not something that is reprehensible, and that's what you have to make them deal with. It's a subtle kind of war. It's a very subtle war to be waged.
I'm with you there. I understand those tactics, and I'm... I guess, you know, Howard Stern really set me off on this, listening to something like that and hearing, understanding his fluff and understanding the hype and understanding when they're seriously scared. And to hear those folks, Fred Norris and Robin Quivers and those people sound scared, and I don't hear it as being an act.
No, well, it's their livelihood. It's what they've been doing for years.
That's what they say. I want my big house going away.
You know, Howard's done extremely well, and you know, the rest of them are doing pretty good too. You know, so again, for them, it's a, you know, a bread and butter issue. And if there's no climate for them to keep producing the things they produce, that's not a good thing.
Well, how do you feel about people like I remember at one point, I had an artist who was, and I'm very proud of all the books I've put out, and I had a person that went up against a censorship case, and he backed down. He just didn't want to go through it. It was, and I feel that was a bad decision. And it just fucks up everyone else.
Well,
if you don't,
the thing is,
because they're going to set a precedent that way. If you don't stand tall and fight, then you're letting them set a precedent for me now or other people.
Well, that can be true, but also as an individual, you have to decide whether, you know, going up against somebody is going to make you a martyr and crush your life, and are you doing it for them or are you doing it for you?
Yeah.
You know, your life is limited. You don't have a chance, you know, you're not coming back. So you got to kind of say, well, what is it worth to me as a person to do this? And the whole thing is sometimes it's worth it and sometimes it isn't. And the people who want to censor you are always going to try to make it not worth your while to go through with it. And your values make all the difference. If the victory of not being censored is so strong, and that would even follow through at the risk of you losing any kind of livelihood and maybe even being forced out of doing what you do, you have to weigh those issues. And really, everybody's got to make that choice, and it's their lives, and they have to feel comfortable with that decision. You know,
you don't think there's any responsibility when you start communicating to the masses that you sort of stick up for those same rights that you've abused and abused until they stopped you?
Well, it really depends on... You'd have to take it very specifically. I mean, that's too general, I think, to really comment on. The masses are the masses, and they're going to think whatever is put in their heads anyway, and whatever the television is basically projecting it,
right,
what they're going to accept. So if the trend is against what you want to have out there, you know, the thing is, if you get ground up and spat out like hamburger, you know, what good does that do? You know, sometimes it's better to pretend to be co-opted and be subversive from the inside.
Well, I mean, and the point you talk about being creative and fighting the rebellion or being rebellious creatively is being stifled to a point where people are afraid to be creative. When I heard what was going on and all stuff, I was absolutely afraid to do anything I was doing. I was stuck.
You know, Shane, this has happened before, and there were very clever ways around it. Remember during the McCarthy era?
Right.
And there were all the blacklists. But
sure.
The smart filmmakers, what they did is start to encode their messages in much subtler ways. They wrote film scripts that basically went over the heads of most of the censors. But anybody with a brain would look at it and go, I see what you're talking about. You're criticizing this whole thing, and you know, you've got actors in here who are portraying this, and you're basically showing the repression for what it is, but you're doing it in a very subtle way. And then that kind of thing created a climate to come out of that repression. And I think that's what's going to happen again. It's that kind of intelligent subtlety that needs to be applied to remove the repression.
Howard Stern read part of my letter over the air, and it said basically what you had just said. It's time to get creative and not quit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because he wanted to quit and get off the air, and he said he was afraid for his children's lives.
Well, you know, the thing is, when you have, you know, radical people, you know, like those, the loons who bomb abortion clinics and such, you know, and those kind of people, when those kind of Christian dogmas get promoted, feel that they've got some kind of justification. So you have to watch out with that, you know. And it's a funny thing, too. You can get into the idea of promoting sort of radical Christianity, and, you know, we have the spectacle of Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ out there. And, you know, aside from being fairly dull and, you know, being pretty much a clockwork messiah.
I love that term.
You know, it really is something that can be used by a lot of Christians to say, hey, look, you know, the Jews and the pagans tortured, you know, our messiah in the most horrible way possible. So now it's our turn to do it to them, you know, that we have the power. You know, that kind of turnabout in violence, and of course, like, the Christian church has done that, you know, over 2,000 years. When you watched the scene where, you know, Yeshua is being flogged, all of the little devices that are laying out there for the Romans to be using are all the same things that the Christians used on anybody they considered to be heretics during the Inquisition. So, you know, those tables did get turned, and the Christians became just as vile a repressor of people they disagreed with as was going on there.
You have been listening to part one of a three-part interview with Church of Satan High Priest Peter Gilmore, Peter H. Gilmore. Okay? The H stands for hell. Hellion. Yeah, this is part one of a part three, Three Ring Radio exclusive interview with Peter H. Gilmore, High Priest of the Church of Satan. Tune in next week for part two.